Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm Ruth. It's so good to have you here today. However you're listening, it's really good to have you listening in. This is episode 29 of A Quiet Life. Amazing. I have 28 in my notes, but it's actually episode 29. I'm getting close to that 30 milestone, so I'm pretty happy with that. As I record this, it is Wednesday the 8th of May 2019. Probably nobody else has this milestone of 30 episodes, but I listened to a very long-standing podcast, and Joanna Penn, who does that podcast, says she doesn't ever go on anyone's podcast until it's been going for 30 episodes, because then she knows it will continue on. So I'm hoping that as I'm about to hit 30, that this means this podcast will continue on. And I want to say thank you for the little messages that people send me on Facebook, the comments that they put on Facebook and in other places, and those comments, that encouragement helps me to think that this is helpful to you and that you want it to continue. I hope I'm not misreading there. I hope this is helpful to you and you want it to continue. Please let me know. It's really nice to hear from you. Today's guest is Megan, and Megan is just absolutely delightful. I'm sure you will love her her conversation. She speaks very quickly, so it's a short interview, and if you're the person who listens on 1.5 speed and hears me as a chipmunk all the time, you'll find maybe that you have to go back to single speed with Megan. No, she's great. It's a really encouraging interview. I always love talking to Megan. She's a long standing friend of mine, and we get together for coffee and have good long chats, and it was just really lovely to talk to her on my podcast. So thank you, Megan, for coming along and sharing with us about your life. This week in my life, well, we had the big weekend last weekend, and I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I think that the cold that I've been just pushing off and pushing off and pushing off may have finally come and hit me on the head. I'm feeling just a little under par, a little croaky and a little sniffly today, and I hope that that'll go away soon. I don't have time to be sick. I don't want to be sick. I've got too many things I want to do, but we'll see how that pans out. Stay tuned. We'll see what happens next week. I had the dinner for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary on Friday night, and that went beautifully. It was just a lovely, lovely time with close family and friends, and just joyful and to celebrate. My parents got married in a tiny little Anglican church in Signet, and it turned out that on Sunday afternoon, Moz and I had to go for a drive down to that Anglican church in Signet because we're talking to them about, you know, putting up TV screens and changing things a bit so it's easier to worship there. And it was just amazing to see all these old photos around the church on Friday night and then go and see that it looks pretty much exactly the same now. Same lovely people, same beautiful place. Yeah, so that was very cool. The hill seemed a lot steeper in real life than it did in the photographs. And then on Saturday morning I had the book fair. And well, that was Saturday all day, and I achieved my goals. I sold some books, I got some sign-ups to my newsletter and my blog, and that's all I really wanted to do, so that was really good. And then in the evening we had our women's ministry event night, and the way that we did it was we had a lot of different possible events, so people could go for a night bushwalk or sit around a bonfire or do some wine tasting or watch a movie or drink coffee or do a craft of some sort, and mine was a writing workshop. So I only got 2 takers, and I was really grateful for that. I didn't really need a large crowd after Saturday, and so the three of us sat at table together. We did some writing and we did some talking about writing, and it was just a lovely evening, really lovely evening. And then Sunday, well, the first thing I did was read a book from beginning to end. That was awesome. Sitting in bed, reading a book. And then, yes, as I said, I went for a drive down to Signet with Moz and checked out the church down there. And so rested and got myself together again. Obviously not quite enough because I'm still feeling a bit coldy today. But it's all fine. It's going to be fine. So yeah, and the week coming up is just a normal week and I'm really, really looking forward to it. I've got my own writer's afternoon tea on Saturday afternoon where we do some more talking and writing. And if you're from around here and you want to do that, feel free to pop into my place and have some nibblies and chat about writing. We're talking about character development this week, so that'll be fun. I'm leading the church service on Sunday and yeah, just basically life as usual, which is really, really nice. So that's my life. It's been big. It's going back to normal. I'm really, really thrilled that we're going back to normal. And now we'll have a chat to Megan. Now you'll hear that the sound quality is a bit funny. I'm sorry about that. So we went and sat outside because Megan's family were all inside. It was during the school holidays. And so there's a little bit of wind noise and a little bit of volume issue that I haven't quite been able to smooth out completely. But I've done the best I can, and most of the problem occurs in the beginning of the interview, so if you just bear with us, it becomes clearer after about 5 minutes, I think. So if you can put up with it for a little bit, it'll clear itself out. So it's worth listening to, it's worth bearing with the noise issues, and I hope you really enjoy this interview with Megan as much as I enjoyed sharing with her when she was talking to me. And I will catch you on the flip side. Today's guest is Megan. Megan's one of my high school friends, and I have the best high school friends. And Megan and Tony have three fabulous children, two in high school, one in primary school. And those three fabulous children plus a friend are inside. So Megan and I have come outside to record this.
Where it's fabulously warm.
It's quite chilly, but it's a lot quieter than it is inside. So so that's great. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this interview with Megan. And yeah, I think we'll just start, shall we? How did you become a Christian?
How did I become a Christian? Wow. I grew up in a Christian family. We went to church most Sundays. That was pretty normal. Didn't really get what it meant to me personally, though. Then one Easter, that Easter that I was 15, when my grandma came to stay, and my mum thought it'd be a good idea to get all the kids out of the house and sent me along with my cousins off to Uniting Church Easter camp, which really, really changed my life. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But the thing that I loved the most was the fact that these people were just really loving. They just exuded love and joy and love. So the following year, when I went off to college, where I met Ruth, I think it was the first week they had a thing about being a Christian. The Christian group was starting on Mondays and going, great, Christians, that's what I want. I want them. So I decided there and then that I was going to join the Christian group. I didn't really know a lot about what that meant for me personally, but I figured they were pretty much like me. And people started asking me about when I became a Christian, like, well, I've always been one. Duh. I was born one. And people were talking about a relationship with Jesus, and these guys prayed, and Ruth was one of them, prayed and really seemed to get Jesus like the adults did, which I found kind of odd. Kind of at the same time as that, a lot of my life started really falling apart. My home life was pretty screwed up, and I really wasn't coping even less. I was coping less than I had been. And I reached out to the fabulous Ruth Amos. I don't know what to do. Please help me. I don't know what to do. Bless her. She said, talk to my mum.
Because my mum's pretty good.
Her mum's pretty good, which kind of freaked me out. Because I don't like mums. Mums are scary. What do mums know about anything? And her and a couple of other beautiful friends paid for me to go to another Christian camp. It's like, good, I like camps. Camps are good. Talked to Ruth's mum at the camp. And Ruth's mum sat me down and she asked me about Jesus and questions about how I knew Jesus. And I was like, oh, that's not the point. That's not what I'm here to talk about. And she led me through a prayer of saying sorry to God for stuff I'd done, which just felt so strange. It's like, what on earth? Well, where'd this come from? I don't understand. And I came back to my cabin feeling a bit disappointed. But the next day, something happened. There was a get-together, sing-along, a worship, praise and worship time. And I can say now, in language that I do have, that God got a hold of my heart in a whole new way. All I knew at the time was that I just started crying and I couldn't stop. And I ran outside and I just started talking to God like he was in the room with me and just said, I can't do this, God. You have to get a hold of me. You have to take my life and just do whatever you want to do with it. And the craziest cool thing was that it felt like God was there with me and I felt the burden of all my life lifting off me and then I became a new person. It was transformational and miraculous and ridiculous and insane and unbelievable. And I remember going up to Ruth afterwards going, it's all gone! It's all gone! She's like, yeah, that's what happened. I'm like, you don't understand. And that was 20-something years ago and I've never looked back.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
It was.
And it was pretty transformational. It wasn't complete and utter healing of every bad thing in your life at that time.
No, it wasn't.
A long journey.
Things got worse before they got better in a practical sense. But the thing that I remember saying to Ruth so clearly was like, I've got someone with me. There's a scripture in Matthew, surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I'd felt really alone, like desperately, desperately me against the universe, and to know that I had someone with me, that God who created the universe was with me on that journey no matter what I walked through, was just, it changed my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Hooray! So you had a fairly early brush with cancer. Do you want to tell us about that?
Sure. One of the things that I've wanted to do my whole life is to be a writer. So soon after uni, I'm going to write a book, that's fine, I'm going to write. And did a lot of research back in the days before there was the internet. My kids don't know about that, but there was a time before the internet. Used to go to the library and I got a whole lot of books out on the cancer journey, on surviving cancer, on dying and death, and it was a very deep book, I didn't finish it. One of the books that I read in this was talking about how women in their early 20s should check their breasts, and I was like 21, 22 at the time. Check my breasts, found it up. Went off to my GP, who was lovely, who was had breast cancer herself, and said, oh, look, it's fine. It's just going to be a cyst or something. They're really, really common in people of your age. But just because of my own journey, I'm going to send you off for further testing. But thank God she did. They sent me to a biopsy.
Which was horrible. They put needles in really painful places. And it was horrible.
However, and the biopsy came back clear, which was fine. Like, the crazy people called me up about 3 months later and said, we've got to do another biopsy now. It's like, I'm sorry.
No, thank you. That's horrible.
What? You've done one. What do you want another one for? I said, oh, it's either that or take it out. I said, can you just take it out? I'm going to do them every 3 months. Just get rid of the thing. So I had just a minor operation under a local. I say that with a funny thing in my voice because I cut into a bit that wasn't anaesthetized.
Oh.
That was bloody painful. Anyway, moving right along.
This is so great.
They called me up within a day or two and said, please can you come into the clinic, wherever it was, as soon as you can. So I called them back and said, yes. And they sat me down and said, we're really sorry, but the bit that we did the biopsy of originally was clear, but it was surrounded by a group of malignant cells.
Mm.
So we now need to do a sectional mastectomy and take out some lymph nodes and find out how things are going. So thank God that I started writing that book, because if I hadn't seen this, if I hadn't read that information, there's no way I would have checked my breasts.
Mm.
And in the 10 years, 20 years of tape would have spread a lot further than just my lymph node. So I ended up having more further surgery, chemo, because it was a little bit on my lymph nodes, and radiotherapy. And that was that.
That was that. And that has been that. You've been all clear.
Because I was 23 when they discovered it. So the surgeons were very much like, oh, we need to keep an eye on you really closely and we'll see you every 6 months. And I've been totally slack, which is awful. But I do go periodically. And now that I'm 40-something, I have mammograms all the time because they call me up and say, come in for a mammogram. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful. At the time that I was having chemo, there's a lady that I a grandmother, a friend of mine that I'd grown up with, who had breast cancer as well, and she died. And that was a real sombering moment, thinking, God, it's by your grace that I'm still here. This is not you know, this is not an easy thing, that I'm just stupidly lucky that I got off lightly from what could be a really horrendous sentence.
I remember at the time, because I was having kids at the time, and there was some fear that you wouldn't be able to have children, or, you know, it really seemed to be a sentence over the rest of your life.
Yeah, they weren't, because of the chemo, it was a fairly low-dose chemo, but they weren't, again, because I was so young, they weren't sure about how would it affect my ability to conceive in the future. So they sent me off to Melbourne to have my eggs harvested, which is, again, just more procedural stuff, yeah, more stuff, yeah, to work through. But I had three kids naturally, which is awesome.
That's fantastic. Wow, that's awesome. All right, so change subject. What do you do for a job?
The cool thing is that, having said that I always wanted to be a writer, I'm now a writer.
That's so cool.
It's not anything like I thought I'd be. My official title, I have two jobs, is communications manager for both places, and I'm not sitting around writing novels all day, but I'm writing emails and newsletters and Facebook posts and letters from people. And I realised that it's kind of a skill that I never kind of, that I kind of took for granted, that not everyone can just compose emails quickly and send them off. And,
no.
Yeah, some people really struggle with that stuff. So, yeah, my job's to take people's messages and get it out in a way that makes sense and communicates well and effectively.
Cool. That's a very cool job.
It is pretty cool. And I'm always, because of the, one, I work for a radio station, one, I work for another firm who represents a whole bunch of different clients. So I'm often working for completely different people and having to get inside the heads of their audience and what they want to say. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So how does your faith play out in that sort of work situation?
I'm one of the most blessed women in the world because I have two fantastic Christian bosses who are just both amazing and so supportive, which has been great. In terms of my work, how my faith plays out, it's a funny question. One thing, there's a scripture again. I have no idea where it is, somewhere in the Bible, talking about work as if you're working for God and not for man. I'm very aware that when I'm writing, let's say I'm writing a fundraising letter for someone or writing a Facebook page to get someone to take an action to go ahead, it's a little tiny cog connecting maybe donors with an organisation that's designed to help people. So whether whether it's reaching people with the gospel, whether it's reaching people with practical help, it's something that I can do to support people and be a little cog of connection in a larger chain of a wheel. So I really enjoy the fact that sometimes I do terribly boring things. I had a job once, I had to go through the most searched keywords for certain topics. It's like,
yeah.
Yes, 3 days of that was insanely boring, but at the same time, it's for an organisation that's leading people to Jesus and connecting people to Jesus. Mm. And if that tiny little cog wasn't there, then it's,
yeah,
it's something that's helpful.
Yeah. So do you do ad copy and things like that?
Yeah.
So do you find that, because I'm learning how to do copywriting as well for my own business, and, you know, there's an awful lot of manipulation that occurs in this sort of space.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't like manipulation at all, and I will not tell lies. I'm glad that most of my clients aren't Harvey Norman or you know, real sales. I don't think I'd do so well in that kind of really, really sales orientated environment. A lot of the clients I work for are, I don't know, a lot of not-for-profits, some humanitarian. There's people who are trying to, like, we did some work for, I don't know if I should say clients' names or not. Probably not. We'll go with not. But organisations who are helping others.
Yeah.
So when I'm doing ads for those guys, it's very easy to put myself in that place of going, there's people out there who need help, and if you over there on the other side of this ad can help them, then do so. So that's a real heart connection. I would find it very, very difficult if I was, I'm not a salesperson naturally at all. It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So if I knocked on your door and wanted to sell you, I don't know, a fire alarm or something, it's like, oh, not that you need it, it's okay, don't panic. It's totally fine. It's just,
yeah.
You've really got to believe in what you're writing.
Yeah.
Connect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it takes a while to dig into where that connection is, but once you've got that little nugget of this is the truth that I want to convey, Yeah. It's much easier to convey it.
And it, I think it's also really awesome that you can be, as you say, part of the cog in the machinery that uses your skills that you don't have $1 million to give, but you can help other people use your giftings in that way. Mm. That's really brilliant. Cool. So when do you feel close to God?
There's kind of two answers to that question. There's the physical thing that I feel close to God when I'm at the beach because I love the beach. I love those borderline spaces of where the ocean meets the sand, and that's really special. So I walk onto the beach and I feel the presence of God.
It actually, when I came to meet with Megan today, her son said, "Tell everyone how horribly she punishes people." So this horrible, horrible punishment that Megan dealt to her son was...
I took him to Baronia Beach.
Took him to the beach. What an awful thing to do.
He hit the wall yesterday. It was far too much. Easter chocolate is pretty much the catalyst. It was like, I do not know what to do with you. All I know is you have to get out of this space right now. So I whacked him in the car and drove him to the beach. Oh my gosh, the complaints. I felt better.
It's fantastic. It's great. So yes, no, the beach is a special place for me too.
But the other answer to that question is, when do I feel close to God? Is there's times when I need him the most, the times when really there's nothing else and you have no idea what else there is to hold on to, and you just go, help!
Mm.
And that peace and the presence of God just falls and you go, whew, all right, yay, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death and all that, I'm all right, because those times that you just know that God's holding your hand and it's going to be okay, that's kind of cool.
Mm, absolutely it is. So... final question is, what's one thing about God and Christianity you wish everyone knew?
I wish everyone knew that God loved them personally. That I wish everyone knew that God just wants to be friends and just wants to get in and help and be that personal connection, not the God up in the sky kind of, you know, sets the world in place and leaves everyone be, but just the personal God that, and I wish everyone knew that when you let him, God has this incredible way of taking the impossible and turning things around and making them right and taking insanely stupid situations that are really headed towards destruction and can turn everything around just really subtly and just make things beautiful and right and in ways that you just never dreamed possible when you let him. I think there's too many people often discount God as uninterested and uncaring, and it's like, no, that's the furthest from the truth.
Not the God that I know.
Not the God that I know, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Megan. It's really awesome to have your story to tell.
Thank you very much.
Wasn't that wonderful? It's so great to talk to Megan. It was so great for me to remember that, you know, she has gone through this cancer journey and I had forgotten about it. And to hear the bits and bobs of her life now and how she's serving God in what she does. Next week we talk to Kath. Kath's son Tom was born with quite a severe disability and he passed away about 10 years ago now, and we talked to Kath about that, and we talked to her about her work as a chaplain and her travels to Uluru every year, what she does there and why. So it's a great conversation. I want to thank Catherine Joy especially for the music. Catherine Joy is from Joy Music House. And I want to thank you for your support. And as I said at the beginning, I love your comments. Find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author, Twitter at A Quiet Life, email me at ruth@ruthamos.com.au. And yeah, I'd love to hear from you. And feel free to share this podcast with someone that you think it might help. I will see you all again next week.